This is Earth Tribe Radio, www.earthtriberadio.com. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Fiona. Guess what we're going to talk about today? This is your idea, and I think it's an excellent one. And I think especially because we're women, I think women have challenges with their mothers. When does it not become a challenge anymore? Why is it a challenge? And sometimes it's never a challenge. But
I think there's probably every person has some challenges with their mothers. I haven't heard of any that have never had a challenge with their mother. There's something about mothers that can be quite challenging, even if they're loving. My mom was very loving, and every so often it would be a challenge to work with her. So how do we...
Give us an example of a time where it was hard for you.
Well, I can remember I used to have terrific menstrual cramps, like really, and I think that was probably because of lack of magnesium. They were just massive. I'd throw up, have lights in my head, and I was just in excruciating pain. I would hold on to the bed. And she would come in and want me to tell her how I was feeling. And what was wrong, she kind of knew what was wrong, but in that day, and I would just be totally quiet because I was dealing with so much pain that I couldn't...
You couldn't have a conversation about it.
I couldn't have a conversation, but she was so worried.
Yeah.
She wanted to know what was happening for me. And I guess after a while, she learned not to keep asking, because I used to find it quite annoying, actually, when she would ask that.
Yeah.
And she was being loving, and I was, I was not answering.
Yeah.
Of course, now it would be different, but...
So when... Well, you had a loving mom. When did your relationship shift with your mother? Did it ever shift? Was she ever encouraging you to do one thing or be one way, and then all of a sudden it shifted? So,
I don't think so. I know that when I wanted to go overseas, we didn't have a lot of money, so she made a whole suitcase full of clothes out of different things so that I'd have clothes to travel in. And when I was singing, she would come to every performance I did, at the conservatorium, and she always thought... No, I never believed her because she always said I was beautiful. So it was like everything was beautiful all the time. And my dad didn't. He was more like he would be more. But for mom, I was always beautiful. I was always perfect at singing. I was always perfect at what I did. And actually, that was annoying too for me as a young person, because it felt like she wasn't being genuine.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I look back as a mother, and I just realized that she loved me so much that for her what I did was perfect.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that now. She died when I was 37, so I didn't have all the knowledge that I have now.
No, yeah.
to be able to know and appreciate who she was. How about you?
Oh, well,
and yours is an important thing, because you had a lot of challenges with your mom.
Yeah.
And the way she treated you.
A lot of challenges. As a matter of fact, after my father died, I took mom. Her doctor suggested that she see a psychologist to help her. So I used to once a week drive her to the psychologist's office. And at one time he called me in after mother had left. And he said, your mother has been so abusive of you all your life. She sat here and told me instant after instant after instant, and you have got to confront her with this. You've got to confront her with this. First of all, that did two things for me, because, yes, she was horrible, absolutely horrible. Not to all the kids, only to me, but she was...
Well, you were the one who she thought ruined her life, because
she got pregnant
with you when she didn't want to.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I ruined her life. So then all the other kids come along, same father, but they're okay, but not me. So I didn't want to confront her. I just thought, she's just lost her husband. Why would I do this? And now I think that was probably not the right thing to do. Maybe I could have done it in some way, because I feel I'm in this weird thing right now where she's 97, she's got dementia, she's blind, and she's pretty well bedridden, you know. She gets wheeled to her chair once in a while. She has a special chair that she will sit in if we can get her to it. But, you know, she's hanging on. And one of the nurses said she's got great anxiety about dying. And having been raised as a Catholic, you know, I'm thinking she knows. I was surprised when her psychologist said that she's admitted to all these things, because I thought she would never admit to the things she did.
How did you cope? For people who have had really difficult mothers, you know, mothers that have treated them cruelly, how did you cope, and how do you cope now with that?
Okay, that's two different things. So, I think as a child, I coped in dreams. Dreams meant I would go to
nature too. You
said. Oh, nature, always nature, always nature. Nature is very healing to me, and I used to think that that the earth was my mother. And the sky was my father. That was my protector, and the earth was my mother, and they would look after me. Every night I'd go to bed, and I would create a scenario in my mind, something beautiful, something that I would love. So I existed in my dreams. It's no accident that I wanted to become an actress, because that's how I got through all of this. But there's a certain point in your life when, to me, it was seeing the pyramids for the first time, making that last movie. Mm. It turned out to be my last movie. I was looking at the pyramids and I thought, oh my golly, here I am. And there's so much out there that I want to learn. I don't want to spend my life playing parts, pretending to be people I'm not. I'd rather live a life that somebody would want to make a movie out of, you know? Mm. And so that's when I finished that career and got on with living a life. How I deal with mother now is very interesting. I remember, I guess I started to go through puberty at the age of about 12, and I just wanted a loving family. I mean, we had Leave It to Beaver and all those TV shows, and everybody's happy and they love their kids. Mm. And I remember coming down for breakfast and going to hug mother and saying, oh, mommy, I love you. And she pushed me away and said, don't be stupid. And the other thing she used to say to me is, you have such an ugly voice. Are you not to use your voice around me? I don't want to hear your voice. I don't want to hear your voice. So here we are all these years later. I'm 74 now, so it was 74 years ago she gave birth to me. And I still remember, you have an ugly voice, you have an ugly voice, don't talk around me. And it upsets her when she's blind and she has dementia. It upsets her when she hears my voice. So if I'm taking care of her, I don't talk. I'm just a warm body in the room, a warm, comforting body in the room, but I don't talk.
So how is it, what strengths? Because I know where adversity always creates incredible strengths in us. So what gifts or what strengths did that develop in you?
You know, I think it's we did a podcast, an interview with Patrick McBride, about shamanism. What is a shaman? And he went through a terrible time in life and came out an extraordinary wisdom keeper, a shaman. And he said, when we're given a gift of something, sometimes we have to go through the dark to get to it. It's like the spiritual warrior. Some people would call it that.
It made you seek.
It made me seek, but it made me seek outside of myself, not myself, not something to, what can I wear to make myself prettier? Because I had a mother who would say, she'd take me out shopping for a dress because I had a party to go to, and then I'd try a dress on. She said, oh, you can't get that. It shows your freckles, and freckles are ugly. And, you know, she was always finding some way to make me feel.
Jules are redheads.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah. But But anyway, so it's at a certain point, I think it was after I left acting, and I thought, no, you know. And I had very little to do with home. I lived abroad for 27 years, so I hardly ever went home. And I got a really good sense of myself. And then trying to find a way, how am I going to make a living without being an actress? Where I was making a nice living. But that was an adventure. And I got to find out really who I was, really. And I think the part of that shamanic thing that happened to me was becoming a seeker, the meditation, the listening to the knowledge that we hold within ourselves. I was able to, I don't know, but it at some point it already existed within me, and I had to go through, as Don Alejandro said, you had to go through this to find that. And and I think it was, I don't know. I left acting, and then a couple of years later, I left England. So I was rootless, and I had this wonderful son, and where were we going to be, and what was I going to do to keep us together, and him doing what he needs to do, and. But I really began an understanding with nature. Being in nature, I understood things. I don't know how to explain it, but I remember I have a sweat lodge that my Lakota family came to our house in California and built it and told me that I had to pour water for the people. And so I did for many, many years. Every week, and Mother used to come up. She loved the heat in the sweat lodge, but she said, you know, when the flap opens and you're there, she said, you become, you shapeshift, you become something else. You are a very old woman. She said, how did you learn how to speak Lakota? Where did that come from? Where did this come from? Where did that come from? It came from everything around me. When I open my arms to the natural world.
And don't you think also that the natural world you had from when you were little, you were kind of driven to it in a sense, or was always a part of you. But at the same time, there was that incredible, the only place you had to go was inside. And to search inside, and who am I, and what is the world about? Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that that was a very significant part of the story.
Well, here's another thing. So when I was 18 and I went to England, and I was invited to a party, and I didn't know anybody, and it was at this grand house and up in New Yorkshire somewhere, and it was scary. I had to walk down this big staircase, and all these people in kilts and everything else were waiting to meet this new American. And I thought, I think I'll just stay. But I thought, no, I how am I going to be to do this? I'm going to be Audrey Hepburn in Breakfast at Tiffany's as I come down the stairs. That's that dream world. That's how I got through a lot of what I got through, is this sort of dream world about how to do it. Well, because I had no idea who I was.
I think actually the majority of people on the planet don't really know who they are because of many of the things we've talked about, being told they should be this or that. But the other thing is, sometimes it can be helpful for people. I know Christine Northrup said when she felt insecure, she would walk with Sophia Loren, I think was her person she would walk with, pretending that she was inside her. But because Dr. Christine Northrup is a major writer and author and speaker.
Woman of wisdom.
You might want to find somebody that you really appreciate, some woman if you're a woman, that you could have beside you when you walk, when you're feeling a little insecure. Mm-hmm. Could be your mother. It could be someone who's a female representation of where you would like to be, or what you would, you know, where you would, how you would like to hold yourself. And it doesn't have to be someone famous. It could be your grandma, could be your mom, it could be your auntie. It could be a lady down the street that you really respect, you know what I mean? Or somebody you've never met. But it's not a bad thing if when you feel a little insecure, to have somebody to walk with you.
And the other thing is, you know, even if you don't have pretty clothes or you have hand-me-downs, and they're not your taste, here's another thing that we could always do is imagine within ourselves the most beautiful, the clothes that you would want to wear that day, and just put in your imagination, within yourself, put them on.
Yes, because it's all transitory anyway.
Exactly.
And it's about getting to the feeling of who you are and being able to stay in that long enough. And it's almost like you've trainer wheels.
Yeah.
You know, you have put the trainer wheels on the two-wheel bicycle until you're stable enough to be able to go off on the bike. Well, these things, some of these things we've been talking about are very much like trainer wheels.
So, you know, a couple of years ago when my mother said something, oh, that doesn't look good on you, it makes you look that, I'd say, oh, what a nice thing to say, Mother. Do you always say such nice things? I try to make a joke, but I call her on it now, you know, or I did until she couldn't do it anymore.
I think it's as we get older, that gets a little easier.
Exactly.
And if we could, you know, it's just a bit easier once you've gone through menopause. Menopause is a huge deal. We're going to do a show on menopause.
I loved it. I tell you, I love menopause.
Because it makes you a different woman, and you get to a different place within yourself. And at the same time, so how do we deal with living our life sometimes under our mother's shadow, sometimes listening to her voice in our head? If it's not what we want, then we can just, you know, again, use the tools that we've talked about so much, which is relax your face and belly and just say to yourself, I am who I am and I'm enough. And I'm going to put my friend here with me. It's my trainer wheels are right on right now. Or it could be a place in nature that you remember, that sitting, a beautiful sacred place that you find. You know, a tree you love, a plant you love, a flower you love, and you could hold that with you to help you be the trainer wheels as well.
But I also feel that if anybody like me went through years of abuse, etc., there, you know, the other side of that, when you come out of that, you will come out of that. And when you come out of that, there's a real gift for you. I can't tell you what it was. Mm-hmm. For me, it became something shamanic, so that I could understand different languages, I could see, you know, the other world, understand things.
The challenges always bring great gifts, and it doesn't. We've both been through a huge amount of challenges in our life. It feels like many lives in this life, but and each one has brought a gift for us as we've traveled through our life.
Aren't we lucky?
Aren't we lucky? This is Earth Tribe Radio, www.earthtriberadio.com,
your home on planet Earth.